Welcome to It Is What It Is. I'm Sha Marie. Today's episode is brought to you by my sister from another mother and another father. Her name's Ashley, aka Smashley, depending on how well you know a bitch, and I know a bitch pretty well. She is my best friend's sister, but we are the same age. She is also one of my best friends, but that's how I got to her. I stole my sister's friend, made her my best friend, and hopefully one day she picks an episode so I can ooh and gosh over her, because I will. But yeah, so Ashley is like a sister to me. I have known her pretty much my whole life. She's one of the greatest women I've ever met in my life. And so she picked Ed Gein. So she's also like weird and crazy, which I love. She's into like spiritual shit and like I don't, she's just amazing. I love you, bitch. Thank you for listening and picking. So like I said, she picked Ed Gein. So we're going to dive into him. So in his earlier life, he was born in Wisconsin on August 27th, 1906. He is the second of two boys to George and Augusta. Ed had an older brother, Henry, and Augusta hated her husband. He was an alcoholic. He was unable to keep a job. He worked various times as a carpenter, a trainer, an insurance salesman. George also owned a local grocery store for a few years, a little mom and pop shop, but sold the business, and the family left the city to go to an isolated farm, an isolated 155 acres farm, by the way, in the town of Plainfield, Washakara County. Fuck off if I said that wrong. Don't mean to. Wisconsin. Anywho. Which became the Gein's family's permanent residence. Augusta took advantage of the farm's isolation by turning away any outsider who would influence her sons. Ed, Edward, depending on how creepy you want to be. I like Ed because it makes me feel like a less of a weirdo. Left the farm only to attend school. That was it. Outside of school, he spent most of his time doing chores on the farm like a good little boy. Augusta was crazy fucking crazy religious. And a. Oh, she was a Lutheran. She preached to her boys about. Oh, the intimate immortality of this world. The devil of, oh, the devil of drinking, and oh my God, the devil's in the drinking. That explains it all. And her belief that all women, except for Augusta herself, were natural possessed beings of the devil, which is nice. So I want you to think of the Water Boy's mom. She's the devil. That's Augusta. She reserved every afternoon to read to them from the Bible, usually selecting verses from the Old Testament on death, murder, and divine redemption. So, cute, adorable stories that every child loves. Well, Ed. Shockingly, he was shy, and classmates and teachers remembered him as being strange. He would sometimes randomly burst into laughter, which was weird, and then he would tell jokes, and if no one laughed, he thought it was a knee slapper and laughed at his own jokes. To make things worse, his mother punished him whenever he tried to make any friend. No friends at all for little Ed, just his mom. Creepy. Despite his poor social development skills, because he had no fucking social development skills at all. He did pretty good in school. He did better in reading overall than anything else. But some things happened to Ed in life. His daddy passes away. On April 1st, 1940, George died of heart failure caused by his alcoholism. He was 66 years old when he passed. So now it was up to Harry and Ed. So they began doing odd chores around town, to help cover the living expenses for the farm. The brothers were reliable and honest. The residents of the community hired them to do odd jobs here and there. Both worked as handymen. And Ed was also a frequent babysitter for the neighborhood. He enjoyed the babysitting and seems to relate more to the children than he did to adults, which does not surprise me at all. Seems how this man has no social skills and children are easy to get along with. Easier to get along with in an adult conversation when you've had no social fucking life whatsoever. So he enjoyed that, which was nice of the town folk. Harry dated a divorced single mom of two and planned on moving in with her. He was worried that his brother's attachment to their mother was not good. When he spoke ill of her mother, of their mother, Ed would respond in shock and sadness and anger and want to know why his brother is saying such mean things about the most amazing woman who has ever lived. Creepy. Okay, so another sad thing happens to Ed. On May 16th, 1944, the brothers were burning away some vegetation on the property, which I assume is like the grassy area, which is the best smell ever. When farmers around here burn, I fucking love it. Anyway, the fire gets out of control. It's crazy. It's everywhere. And it draws the attention of the local fire department. By the end of that day, the fire having gone out, Ed tells them his brother is missing. Dun, 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 dun. So, with lanterns and flashlights, they form a party. They go on searching, looking for him. They find his dead body laying face down. Apparently, he had been dead for some time. It had been apparent that the cause of death was heart failure, since he had not been burned or injured otherwise. Some say that he had a bruise on the back of his head. The police dismissed the possibility of foul play because the coroner later officially said it was asphyxiation that caused his death from the fire. So that was sad. His brother mysteriously died in a fire with no burns on him. Weird. Okay. So Ed and mother were now alone. Now, he is also one of the inspirations for Norman fucking Bates. And we're gonna go on a Norman Bates tangent just real fast, like. So, who's watched Bates Motel? Okay. If you have not, you must. Except for, I will warn you, the first season. I'm going to say the whole first season. You will think at any point in time that this mother and son will bone. I was scared. I kept looking at my husband and I was like, are they gonna fuck? Oh my God. And I turn away and I'm like, did they fuck? And he's like, no, sicko. I'm like, no, dude, I totally get they're gonna bone vibes. Creepy as shit. And he calls her mother. When my kid says that, when she's six and she says it all creepy, she's always like, "Mother." Ugh, I don't let her call me that because it creeps me the fuck out. But Ed called his mom Mother. So anyway, Augusta, okay, she has a paralyzing stroke out of the middle of nowhere shortly after her son's death. And Ed, dream fucking come true for him, I assume. He devotes himself to caring for her. Devotes himself. He loves Mother. Everything is about him and Mother. Scary. Sorry. Oh, nope. I skipped. So, sometime in 1945, Ed encountered his mother visiting a man named Smith who lived nearby to purchase straw. So, he and his mother go to buy, purchase straw from a man. According to Ed, Augusta witnessed Mr. Smith viciously beating a dog. A woman inside the Smith's home came outside and yelled at him to stop beating said dog. Mr. Smith beat that dog to death. This affects Augusta extremely. She is extremely upset by this scene. However, what bothered her did not appear to be the brutality towards the dog, but rather the presence of the woman. Weird, I know. Augusta told Ed, the woman who was not married to Mr. Smith, she had no business being there. She is Smith's harlot, Augusta angrily called to her. And at that point in time, she had a second stroke soon after that. Her health rapidly went down the shithole. She died December 29th, 1945. She was 67 years old. Ed, devastated. Devastated. A guy who wrote a book about him said, and I quote, he lost his only friend, his one true love. He was absolutely alone now in the world. End quote. And literally, people said that at his funeral, he was throwing a fit like a child, like on top of the coffin and the whoo, and like the crazy dramatic snot, drool, fucking crazy. He did that. So, oh, that's weird, huh? Oh, I don't want to ruin Bates Motel for y'all. Okay, I won't. Okay, I will. His mama dies. Like, at the end, not of like the first season, it's a couple seasons. We have to go through some shit, some crazy shit first before we get to the mom dying. Anywho, so there's a big gap I'm leaving empty for you. You're welcome. But mom dies. Fucking creepy Norman, that's his name. Norman, obviously. But he goes to the graveyard, takes his mom, stuffs her. And keeps her as his friend forever. So that's kind of fun. Yeah, fun note. Watch the show, it's a good show. And that's kind of like how they say Ed was like in love with his mama secretly. He loved his mama. Loved his mama. Mama's boy. And she'd always told him everything was the devil. So just that's why they say he did what he did. I haven't told you what he done yet. Anyway. So when his mama died, he held on to that farm. Still earning money from doing old odd jobs, weird jobs around town, shit nobody wanted to do, he did. He also boarded up the rooms that were used by his mother. This included the upstairs, downstairs parlor, and living room, living underneath them while the rest of the house living untouched. Okay, they were untouched while the rest of the house became a landfill of disgusting grossness, trash upon trash, shit everywhere. No one was there to pick up after it. So it was just a fucking catastrophe. But those other rooms remain pristine. Like you could eat off the floor. Well, after you dusted it away, but you could. So he lived in a small room next to the kitchen. Very small. Very, very small. Like, it wasn't even like, okay, so the pictures, I don't know exactly how it was, obviously, but like from the pictures, it looks like the dining room. Like he chose the dining room, like the small little dining room to be his room is what it looks like. I'm going to assume that's what it is. So that's what he did. So around this time, he became interested in reading pulp magazines and adventurer stories. And he He really, really enjoyed stories involving cannibalism and Nazis. So, like I said, Ed was a handyman and received a farm stipend from the federal government. And that started in 1951. He occasionally worked around local road crews, cropping fields. He did a bunch of stuff. Between 1946 and 1956, in that 10-year time, he sold off 80 acres of his land. That part of the land would have been owned by his brother. So he sold that to get some money. So on the morning of November 16th, 1957, a year after he gets done selling his land, okay, the hardware store owner, Bernice, disappeared. No one knew what happened to her. The residents of the town reported her missing. The store's truck had been seen being driven away. So that was odd because the store owner would not have done that. She would not have left her store like that. It was seen driving away around 9:30 a.m. The hardware store was closed the entire day, which seemed weird. But not too weird because it was also deer hunting season. So her son was hunting. The deputy sheriff, Frank, was her son. Uh-huh. Her son was the cop. Okay? He believed it was that until he himself returned to the store around 10 p.m. to find the store's cash register open and a bloodstain on the floor. Frank told investigators that Ed was the last person in the store. The evening before, his mother had sold him a gallon of antifreeze, and that was the last receipt that was on the register. So, on the evening, the same day, November 16th. This is so gross. So, they go. The cops, the police, go to his residence. And they find gross stuff, guys. Oh, they find gross stuff. Okay. So they find in a shed on his property, her hanging upside down, decapitated, with her legs in a crossbar, attached by her ankles by rope, and her arms behind her back, and she was dressed out like a deer. So if no one doesn't hunt, I don't hunt, but I know what that means. Her insides are gone. Her head gone. She's filleted open from, not to be vague, but from puss down, psh, slit open. There's pictures. I haven't decided if I'm gonna post them, or you guys can just fucking Google them like yourself by yourselves. Gross. She had been shot with a 22 caliber rifle, and the mutilations, thank God, were done after she had died. So they see this. He is under arrest. Okay? They arrest him at the grocery at a grocery store in West Plainfield. Anyway, so they go to his house with a search warrant. Dude. So, they find whole human bones and fragments, a wastebasket made of human skin, skin covered chair seats, chair coverings, like his dining room table, the chairs around his table, the seat part where you put your bum was human skin. So that was nice. He had skulls on his bedpost on the end. He had people's noggins. He had female skulls, some with the top sawn off. It's weird. And he made bowls out of human skulls. A corset was made with a female torso. God. Skin covered from shoulders to the waist. Leggings were made out of human skin that he would wear. Masks made from skin of female heads. Mary Holgan's face was in a paper bag. Her skull was in a box. Bernice, her head was in a burlap sack. Bernice's heart was found in a plastic bag in front of Ev's, in front of his stove. Nine penises in a box. A young girl's dress, which they think might have, she might have been like 15 years old, who knows? A belt made of female human nipples. Four noses. A pair of lips on a wooden shade. Draw. Oh, a shade drawstring. That's gross. And his lamp cover was made from skins of human faces. Ew. And he kept the fingernails from women. Oh, God. Oh, God. He even had a wiener necklace. That was so gross. So the artifacts were for, they were, photos were taken of them at the state crime lab, and then they were fucking disposed of immediately. When questioned, he told investigators that between 1947 and 1952, he made as many as 40 nightly visits to three local graveyards to exhume ew, recently buried bodies, and he would do it in a dazed-like state.
Ew.
On about 30 of those visits, he came out of those days while in the cemetery and said, "What the fuck?" and left, and would go home empty-handed. On other occasions, he'd stay in that daze and dig up them bodies, usually middle-aged women that he would check out the newspaper. Check out, he would look at the obituary, and a lot of them resembled his mother, Ugh. And he would take their bodies home. Ugh, where he tanned their skin to make his woman suit. Like he had like the suit of like a woman. Very nice. This is how he became known as either or the Butcher of Plainfield or the Plainfield Ghoul. He admitted to 9 graves from the cemetery that he could lead them back to and show. They only opened up 3 of the grave sites to see if he was full of shit or not. Turns out, Ed wasn't full of shit. There was nothing up in those. And one of them just had random parts in there. Like he took what he needed while there and then like tossed the rest of the body back in the coffin and put it down. One lady, her bones weren't even like, he didn't even bother putting her back. He like put her on the top. She was like fresh underneath the dirt. He didn't even care. It was horrible. Absolutely horrible. So, like I said, they only did 3. And like the lady, she was only 2 feet. So that was horrible. He would do this soon after the funerals, like when everybody would leave, and you would leave your loved one where you just laid them to rest, the hardest thing you've ever done in your life. When you go home, devastated, this creepy little fucking mole looking dude comes scurrying along and digs up your loved one and either takes them whole and takes them and makes a cereal bowl out of their heads, or it would chop off their body parts, take their nipples. Grandpa's penis is on a necklace now. Like, these are the things that he was doing. Ugh. So horrible. One of them only had, like I said, pieces, and they had to pry that open, which is crazy that he like would open these, go through them, and it's not supposed to be, from what I understand, I don't know, never died, not supposed to be easy to open up a casket that is in the earth. That's so scary and creepy. Ew. One was empty, like I said. I don't know why I keep telling you that, because I think I just, that's like the one that gets me the most. Because, like, he carried a dead person back to his home. I just, and like no one sees this. I don't even, they should have put like the distance from graveyard to home. 'Cause I don't know, I think I might have felt better about that. I don't know why, but I maybe I would have. Soon after his mom died is when he began creating the woman's suit, so that he could become his mother and literally crawl into her skin. He said he did not have sex with the bodies because they smelt too bad. And he was like, I guess, very offended that they were like, Ed, did you have sexual relations? And he said no. He claims he was ne he's never had sexual relations with a person. That's what he says. So he admitted to the shooting death of Mary. She's a tavern owner and she was missing since 1954. And her head was one of the ones that was found in the home. But he later denied any memory of her death. A 16-year-old who was parents who was friends with Ed, the parents were friends with Ed, who attended ball games and movies with him, the 16-year-old did reported that Ed had kept shrunken heads in his home when they, like, the kid got into the home. It was a local kid he hung out with. Which I guess was normal. Nobody really thought it was weird that he hung out with children because they were like, Ed's just different. Well, that kid was like, hey guys, Ed has shrunken heads in his house. And he said that they were relics from the Philippines sent by a cousin who had served on the islands during the World War II. Upon investigating by the police, they were determined to be human facial skin, carefully peeled from a corpse and placed by Ed. Ugh. So he was literally shrinking people's head, like the skin, and like making little heads out of them. So he was very crafty. Ed was. God, that was so gross. So he would carefully peel the faces from the bodies. Like, that was like the first thing we do is like we carefully peel that back. And he would wear them, like the faces of like the pretty ones that he would deem pretty, that would look more like his mom. Because I guess doing this to his mother was like unthinkable. But like, I think he did dig her up and like keep her, but I just, ugh, God. So after they find this out and they go in there, they're like, maybe he sh it should be a suspect in other solved cases in Wisconsin, including the October 24th, 1953 disappearance of Evelyn Hartley. She was a babysitter. During questioning, Sheriff Art repeatedly assaulted Ed by banging his head and face into a brick wall. As a result, his first confession was ruled not good. Inadmissible is the word. They said they couldn't use it because he was tortured. The cop died of heart failure at 43 fucking years old. They say. Oh, in 1968. This is before Ed's trial, so that's very sad. Many who knew this officer said that he was so traumatized by the horror of Ed's crimes and all the things to go with it, and the fear of having to testify and live through those again, that that's what caused his death. He is a victim of Ed Gein, they say. Except for the fact that he didn't get butchered, but he is, they say, a fucking victim. Because the fact that Ed's fucking weirdo creepiness craziness, what he saw when he went in there, scarred this motherfucker for life. Killed him. Knocked him dead at 43 years old. Swipe. Out. Horrible. Horrible. On November 21st, 1957, Ed was arraigned for first-degree murder in Wisconsin. He pled not guilty by reason of insanity. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia and found mentally incompetent to stand trial. So he was sent to Central State Hospital for the criminally insane. Now, the Dodge Correctional Institution, a maximum security facility in Wanapun, Wisconsin? Probably fucked that up. I am almost 100% sure I did. And he was later transferred to Medtona State Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. In 1968, doctors deemed Ed mentally able to go in front of the judge again. And so his trial began in November of 1986 on the 7th. It lasted 1 week, 1 week long. Therapists testified that Ed did not know whether the killing, oh, he did not know whether the killing of Bernice was intentional or accidental. Ed had told him that while examining a gun in the wood in the store, in her store, the gun went off, killing her. Ed testified that It was an accident. He did not mean to aim the rifle at her and did not remember anything else that happened that morning. At the request of the defense, Ed's trial, the defense requested that his trial be held without a jury and just in front of the judge, which was probably for the best. He was found guilty on November 14th. A second trial was held to debate his sanity after testimony by doctors. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity and ordered to the state hospital for the remainder of his life. Which is, I believe that he played them. Because everybody says he was like the only person in this hospital that wasn't medicated. That like they didn't medicate him for like the reasons they medicated everybody else, I guess. So he literally was just chilling there every day, like reading a book, chilling like a villain with no repercussions. All because everybody was like, yep, he's weird. He's always been that little weird Ed. So his house and the 95 acres of property that it stood on were appraised at $4,700. That's equivalent to $42,000 today. Well, in 2019, it was scheduled to go up for auction on March 30th of 1958. But early the morning of March 20th, the house and everything within it mysteriously, magically, no one knows what happened. It started on fire. It all came down, all of it, which is insane. The fire marshal reported that a rubbish fire had been set 75 feet from the house by a clearing crew that was tasked of disposing all the trash. And that hot coals from there is what started the fire. So that's horror. It's like it was like a freak accident, like a crazy freak arson accident. I don't know. I think arson is what it was. I personally think that a do-gooder in this town set this fucking place ablaze because they didn't want it to stand. So when they go to tell Ed, they think that Ed's gonna be like devastated. All Ed says is he shrugs his shoulders and he says, just as well. Bam. But Ed's 1949 Ford sedan, which he would use to haul the bodies of his victims, which is nice, was sold at public auction for $700 and oh, $760. Which is equivalent to $6,700 in 2019. It was a carnival sideshow operated by Bunny Gibson. And Gibson charged people 25 cents to go see it. Isn't that cheap as fuck? People still, I guess someone did buy the land and like they went through it. And did find some things, like not everything was burnt, like all the main things, like the big pieces of furniture. There you go. That's what I mean by main things, like the couch, beds, dressers, that shit. Poof. Mysteriously. Well, Ed, he died in the mental hospital. He had sec. He had respiratory failure secondary to lung cancer. So that's sad. He had lung cancer too. He passed away on July 26th, 1984. He was 77 years old. So over the years, people have desecrated his grave. His headstone was actually stolen once. Which is fucking insane that someone would actually go there. It was in 2000, it was stolen. literally, someone hacked his fucking headstone off, and it was recovered in June 2001 near Seattle. It was placed in storage back in Wisconsin at the sheriff's department. His grave now is unmarked, but they say that he lies in between his mom and his dad and his brother at the cemetery, probably by his mummy. So, Ed Gein was so fucked up in the fact that he would dig up people and make body suits out of women that he inspired some shit. And if you want to know what those are, it is Norman, it is Bates Motel, it is Psycho, the 1960 version, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Confessions of a Necrophile, Deranged. That's what it is. Deranged, Confessions of a Necrophile, Hell Motel, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake in 2003. The original was made in 1974. I prefer the original. Psycho, the remake in 1998. Silence of the Lambs, it puts the lotion on its skin or it gets the hose again. Hannibal in 2001 and Silence of the Lambs was 1991. One of my favorite movies. And of course, the movie Ed Gein in 2000. Which I knew of Ed Gein. I knew he was the guy that made the woman suits and he was the guy with the hole and the cute little dog and the dancing and the craziness and the Silence of the Lambs. I knew that was him. Well, after him. But The Silence of the Lambs has many, 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 many parts that are inspired by many different killers. So I really never knew much about him until today. I don't believe that he died a virgin. A virgin. I don't know. I think he might have been a dirty birdie and got down with dead bodies. Even though he says he doesn't mean it's true, you know? I don't think he was the most honest of folk. But, like, there was even a spoon and a fork that were made out of, like, I think they said, like, the leg bones. Like, a part in your leg was, like, the handle. Oh, my God. He was literally eating out of people's heads. And, God, I just don't know, folks. Why do you want that? Like, okay, have you seen what the fuck is that movie with the Big Bird? Jeepers Creepers. Okay? Where like the belly button or whatever is like on the lamp or the wallet or whatever the fuck it was on. That's what it's like. Ugh. I don't even know. But imagine how, like, even though it is gross, okay, and I get that these are deceased people. Your craftsmanship and your art skills are pretty much on point, bro. Like, I don't think that human skin would be the easiest to work with. And the fact that he made seat covers, lamp covers, outfits, a mannequin, like a mannequin that people sew onto, he made one of those out of a chick's body. So, like, he was really good at keeping the skin. Like doing the leathering process of skin. So that I think is hard. So, I mean, it's not like he was talentless, I guess. But hopefully you like this bitch. I love you and I miss you. She lives far away. So I miss you. I love you. Hopefully I did you justice and you liked it. If not, lie to me anyway. And then for the rest of you guys can suggest and all that fun stuff. I have a special, I'm not gonna say names or nothing, but he is my first Twitter. And he recommends a show. And so I'm gonna do his show as well. I don't wanna say his name or anything because I don't wanna give it away, even though I guess he listens, so he'll know. But boo, you're next week. I love you. He was my first tweet, guys. He tweeted at me for the firstest time. He popped my Twitter cherry, so I figure I must do his story. But smash, I hope you love it. I love you. And the rest of you guys, like I said, follow me on Instagram at It Is What It Is Pod19. That's all together on Twitter at It Is What It Is 208, because that's where I am from. on Facebook and YouTube at It Is What It Is, a true crime podcast. And if you guys recommend, I give you the cute little shout out and then I do your story in my own lovely, lovely way. And so, yeah, peace out. Hopefully you guys have a good week and keep it legit. Bye.